Hey, Slump Busters, this is Juju Talk Sports coming with you with episode 74 of the Slump Buster podcast. But first, before we get into the show, let me give a shout out to our partners. First off, Nature's Relief, naturesrelieftx.com. Now, if you use promo code SLUMP, you're going to save 10% off any of their great, fantastic CBD products. You've heard a lot about CBD products. Well, I'm here to tell you about a company that's the best. Why are they the best? Well, they're partnered with us and we're the best podcast. So clearly, great choice. CBD products, even for your dogs. So they're worth checking out. Use promo code SLUMP and save 10% off. Also, you can use promo code SLUMP to save 20% off, plus free shipping and handling on the number one in men's grooming. I'm talking about manscaped.com. Now, Manscaped's been with us for a while. You know it. They are the perfect tools for your family jewels. They have the Lawnmower 3.0, the Perfect Package 2.0, the anti-chafing boxer briefs. Hell, maybe you need the crop preserver. Smell your best all day. Manscaped is the greatest, most innovative products in men's grooming. And I'm here to tell you, you could save some money with our promo code. Save 20% off, in fact, with promo code SLUMP. If you haven't gotten the point, use promo code SLUMP. It's going to save you money. Nowhere else it's going to save you money? Caveman Coffee. Now, if you need that morning boost, which we all do, let's face it, I'm not a morning person myself, Caveman Coffee with their nitro cold brews, their pumpkin spice lattes while that's still in season. They are one of the best coffee products I've had, one of the best cold brew products. They come out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. This show's based out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Breaking Bad comes from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Lots of great Albuquerque, New Mexico products. Check them out, Caveman Coffee, promo code SLUMP. With all these savings, whether it be at Caveman Coffee, manscaped.com, or even Nature's Relief, you got to reinvest. Let me tell you where to reinvest. Razorsport.com. Go ahead and throw your money back out there. Double it. Razorsport has a worldwide team of betting experts and handicappers that are determined to help you beat Vegas. We all need the tools to beat Vegas. Add some more green to the pocket. And Razorsport, RazerSport.com is the website to do it. Go ahead and check them out. Tell them we sent you, and you will not be disappointed in results. So it's been a while since you've heard his voice, but MMA Dre is back on this episode. A lot of great discussions. We're coming off UFC 254. We got to get into some NFL Week 8 action. And then, sadly, I do have to give some congratulations to the Los Angeles Dodgers. But it's time to hashtag bust that slump. Let's get into the show.
Slump-busters. Quiet on the set, make sure my mic is on. Eris, Dre, and Juju Dog diving towards the pylon. Go for two, so damn rude, recognize authority. Spitting tips for fantasy, no way you're outscoring me. Bold predictions with conviction every single day. Sports addiction, no restriction, kicking game like Pele. He's the greatest, what's the basis? Pick an athlete, let's debate this game. Outrageous trading places, sudden death, take 10 paces. Turn and shoot, boys the truth, Mamba mentality. Future greats take their place, dreams become reality. Blowing outside, knocked it out the park. Your boy discovered fire like a rock with a spark. Refs acting like Neanderthals. Phantom flags, nothing calls. Heartbreak losses, tragic falls. Every week discuss it all. Settle in, listen up. Free your time like Andrew Luck. Show's about to start. I suggest you buckle up.
Welcome in, Slump Busters. It is time for another episode, episode 74. And it is time for the return. The people are starving, but MMA Dre is back. And I'm sure he has a lot to talk about, a lot to brag about. For starters, his Steelers are undefeated. His Lakers are champions. And his favorite fighter of all time is undefeated and still champion. Dre, how much bragging are we going to have on this episode?
You know, it's actually bad juju, right? So playing off your name, it's bad juju for me to brag. So I'm not going to do too much bragging, especially because like with the Lakers, we just went through a really bad decade. The Steelers, we've always been pretty good, but never quite where I want us to be. And then, you know, it's bittersweet with Khabib with his retirement. But you will hear a little bit of bragging here and there, right? So it'll be like a lukewarm brag.
We'll get into that. But unfortunately, I'm going to hear a lot of bragging from a certain fan base that I'm not too fond of myself as a San Francisco Giants fan. Congratulations to the 2020 World Series champion, Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, I am mentally prepared for this moment for a long time. I knew it was going to happen. The Dodgers, they're good. They've drafted well. They brought in a lot of great homegrown stars. But might I start here and say, Kevin Cash, what the fuck are you doing? You're pulling Blake Snell, and we have talked about Blake Snell on this show. I maligned Blake Snell when he said he would rather play Fortnite, essentially, than play for a few million dollars for a 60-game season. But the point is, he was pitching last night. The point is, he was on the World Series mound last night. And through five innings of play, the Dodgers hitters could not touch him. And you decided, after one base hit, his second hit allowed of the night, hey, Blake Snell, we're going to bring in the reliever. Guess what the reliever does? Immediately gives up the lead. And that is why the Dodgers, instead of watching Game 7 tonight, we have the Dodgers, Los Angeles going rampant. Obviously, they have the dual champion era, 1988. The curse is broken for them. I just got to say, and I know you're not a big baseball fan, but at least understanding that situation there. Kevin Cash, how bad of a decision is this? Is this going to be looked on as one of the worst coaching decisions in any major sport in years?
It's definitely up there, right? Especially that you're on the biggest stage. So you're on the biggest stage. You sort of overmanage, overcoach the game where you're like, hey, I'm going to pull somebody. And like you said, it was two hits, right? And not even like grand slams or anything like that. Just two regular old base hits. And then it's like, okay, you're out. I thought it was overcoaching. It reminds me sometimes of like basketball, like the coach that doesn't call a timeout when they're going on some crazy run, right? Or in football, if you're not managing the clock very well, right? And you get into these late game situations. But to do that on the biggest stage, it's just bad, especially when you know, right? Like if you lose, you're going home. And it just seemed like that was one of the worst sort of management decisions that we've seen in at least recent history.
And not just management decisions. I think this is a big indictment on analytics. And analytics have their place. Believe me, I think that there is a role to play in using the saber metrics, using the data, percentages, working against the odds. But whenever you just use the eye test and you see a guy that's just rolling, like I said, the Los Angeles Dodgers hitters weren't even in the same time zone on their swings. The guy was nasty last night. He was just throwing straight gas, 97. And even though it was going to be his third time through the order, and I guess the argument that Kevin Cash tried to say in his post-game presser was, oh, well, he never really goes through the third time in the order throughout the year. He never even pitched past the sixth throughout the season. So why are we going to do this in the World Series? The point is, it is the World Series. You've got to do different things. You've got to do whatever it takes to win. Again, going back to the Giants fanhood here. In 2014, Madison Bumgarner pitched a complete game shutout in Game 5. And 2 days later, pitched five innings in one of the greatest World Series performances ever. 2 days of rest and pitched 14 innings. I'm sure the analytics would said, oh, Madison Bumgarner, you should not let him in via the third time in the order, fourth time in the order, fifth time in the order. But Bruce Bochy, if he would have even stepped outside the dugout to take Madison Bumgarner out of that game, there would have been a fist fight on the mound. Madison Bumgarner would have just straight thrown him into one of those Freddie Ventura headlocks and just beat the shit out of him. Blake Snell honestly should have fought a little bit more to stay in the game because that's just not the time. That's not the time to overmanage. You just got to believe what your eyes are telling you. And everyone's eyes, the millions of viewers that were watching that, is Blake Snell is straight up filthy out there. Do not take him out of the game. Again, congratulations to the Dodgers. A big storyline that came out of last night's game, though, and I don't think it's that big a deal personally, Justin Turner. Justin Turner apparently tested positive the day prior. They still let him play despite waiting for the second test because in these situations, they don't just test him once. They essentially test him twice just to be sure. And the second test came back positive as well, meaning he has it. He is a positive individual in terms of coronavirus. He went out there. He was pulled in the sixth inning of the game. They told him, MLB officials told him, you are not allowed to go back out there. You need to isolate. Celebration time comes. He is out there. Ken Rosenthal reports he's out there. And there's some horrible visuals in particular in this situation, him making out with his wife, him in the team picture. And at one point, he wasn't in the team picture with a mask. And I was saying a pre-show here, if you're going to be in that situation in general, always have your mask on, right? He literally pulls down the mask and tosses it to the side so he can get his pearly whites in the team photo. How bad of a look is this? Do you think it's, well, here's the thing I should ask. Is it news or noise? Because I put a poll out on the IG story. 40% of you think it's news. So Dre, if you think it's news too, I want to hear your side of it.
I do think that it is news, right? And I think part of it is there's some, it's been politicized for sure, right? Everybody, you know, if you're a Republican Trump supporter, you're definitely like, oh, coronavirus is no big deal. Then if you're a Democrat Biden supporter, you're like, oh, this pandemic is, you know, awful or whatever. You know, I'm somewhere in the middle myself personally. But I do think that it is news. We are still in a pandemic. And we hear time and time again about people having complications, right? And so it just comes, to me, it comes across as you're being inconsiderate of your teammates, right? And I get, you don't win a World Series very often, right? Like there's very few people that even get to win one, you know, let alone multiple. And so like, hey, why not, you know, live it up and take pictures? But at the same time, right, like it can be a serious health risk, right? And at this point, you know, now that the World Series is over, everybody's going back home. They're all going to go celebrate with their families or whatever. And if you spread it to the rest of your team, you risk them spreading it on to somebody else who potentially has a lot of complications. And that's where I do think that it is news. I do think that somebody from whatever organization, whether it be the Dodgers or from the MLB themselves, should have said, hey, if we let you go out there, you must maintain the mask the entire time. Do not take it off. And if you do, maybe you're going to get fined or something like that. So that's why I do think that it's news. Do I think anything's going to come of it? I don't necessarily know. Like I said, maybe a small fine or something just so baseball looks like it's taking it serious. As far as complications, I hope he doesn't spread it to anybody else. I hope they don't get complications, right? Like, so, you know, you mentioned him kissing his wife. Hopefully his wife is fine. I think that's going to be a little bit hard, right? Like usually once your spouse gets it, you're probably got it. And so, but again, I hope they don't pass it on to anybody. Hope everybody's okay, but I do think it's a little bit of news.
So Justin Turner's teammates also spoke on the situation. Mookie Betts, who's the star of the team now, breaking Boston fans' hearts, seeing him win a World Series title in his first year away from the Red Sox. He commented on the situation and said, we wanted Justin out there, basically fuck the rules, whatever, we want a title. And I don't think that the MLB necessarily should fine or suspend. People are talking about that. That's a big talking point right now, I'm noticing on Twitter. And I only say that because it was the last game of the year at this point. I'm sure that given what we know now, a lot of these guys are going to isolate. It was a moment of humanity where the guy wanted to go out there, have fun, enjoy his accomplishments, something that he's worked for, not just hard this year, but in his entire career, his entire playing career, going back to Little League. This is the thing that all of us strive for when we think about our professional fields. And I can't bemoan the guy for wanting to enjoy that. And it's kind of the equivalent of someone's leaving the door without their mask and you yelling at them to go put on the mask. The season's over. There's not going to be another game played after this until next year. So I don't see the point in doing it unless you're trying to get ahead of it for next year. And if we're still dealing with this by next year, then we have a whole other set of problems that we're dealing with in this country and in this world in regards to COVID-19 vaccines and everything else that we've been working with to get a resolution. But Dre, I know baseball's not your strong suit, so let's transition into something that is. We do call you MMA Dre after all. This past weekend, we had a huge fight. Khabib Nurmagomedov going against Justin Gaethje for the right to go 29-0. And of course, that always is going to bring up the major talking point. At first, I'll allow you to talk about the fight, but the question to follow up on that is Khabib the GOAT? Let's start things off.
Yeah, so I guess to answer that question, in my opinion, Khabib Nurmagomedov is the greatest of all time. And here's my sort of argument for why he is the GOAT. Above John Jones, above Anderson Silva, above GSP, above everybody else, he by far is the GOAT. When you look at dominance, just sheer dominance, right? Khabib only ever lost arguably two rounds. So he did for sure lose one to Conor McGregor in that McGregor fight, which we all know what happened to McGregor. And then he arguably lost the first round of Justin Gaethje. I'd have to take a look at the actual scorecards. But even that one is arguable. Other than that, he's never had a close fight, right? It's always been pure domination, no matter what it is. And when it comes to MMA, really, domination is, can I impose my will on you, whatever style it is? The thing that's cool about MMA is that you have so many options, right? You've got guys that are good at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu who can maybe beat some of your strikers, or you've got some really good strikers that you know, can beat some of those grapplers by keeping them at bay, keeping things standing, avoiding the takedowns, whatever. You have wrestlers that can take you down, grind it out. And there's always this mixed match of styles, right? If we think about sort of the triangle of Miesha Tate, Holly Holm, and Ronda Rousey, right? There's always this mismatch of styles. And usually there's always going to be a style that can beat another style. It's just going to happen. But with Khabib, his style was so dominant, nobody even got close. If you look at John Jones, one, John Jones has, you know, the tainted supplements, right? And whether or not you believe he actually took them or he didn't, everybody sort of knows my opinion. I'm on the side of like, okay, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And getting popped for steroids twice, right? Technically a third time with the picograms. I don't give John Jones the benefit of the doubt. But even with the steroids and all that, he's had kind of a close fight with Cormier, even though you could say he easily won it. He still lost two of those rounds. He had a really close fight with Gus. And then with Reyes, he's had a close fight. His Ovince St. Preux fight when he got back after the steroids, or right before the steroids, sorry, he did not look very good either. And so that tells me that John at some point was vulnerable. The loss, I'm not really going to take that away from John. That was a disqualification. Technically, I think John Jones is still undefeated. But I think when you add all those things together, it rules John Jones out of the argument. Then if you look at the other guys that are up there on the list, right? Demetrius Johnson has some losses. George St. Pierre had losses in his career. He had a really close fight that he arguably lost against Johnny Hendricks before he sort of went on to retirement. Anderson Silva, of course, he had the broken leg against Weidman, has never been the same after that. You can even knock him for possibly the steroids after his leg broke. And even before that, he had quite a few losses and close fights as well. And so with all of that in mind, I think Khabib, far and above, is the GOAT. I guess the only knock against him is he only competed in one weight class. And if that's what you're going to say, okay, I agree with that. He did not compete in multiple weight classes. But at the same time, who else has dominated their weight class like Khabib has?
Yeah, true. We'll circle back to this, but let's talk about the fight a little bit. So I just watched it recently, so it could be at least fresh in my head for this discussion here. You talk about that first round. I didn't really see it as Khabib losing that one. I thought that for starters, he had that big takedown at the end of the round. He almost got a triangle choke at the end there in the last 10 seconds. So you can say Gaethje was saved probably by the clock in that circumstance. You can tell the Gaethje strategy was simple. I'm going to keep my distance to kind of neutralize the ability for Khabib to take me down. I'm going to lower my stance so it wasn't as straight stand and bang as Gaethje likes to do. And he did land some nice leg kicks, got Khabib with a couple pops, but Khabib got some decent strikes of his own, I noticed, in that first round. And I think that the game plan for Gaethje was definitely disruptive. He did have a decent stuff of a double leg takedown on Khabib earlier, but he was never able to maintain it. The superior wrestling talent of Khabib just eventually showed through. And that's saying a lot because Gaethje is not a scrub in terms of his wrestling ability. I know he has that crazy statistic that he's never attempted a takedown in his MMA career. But at the same time, if you look at his actual background, the guy's a stud wrestler. And he looked like a child to Khabib in that second round. Khabib was literally, so he went for the double leg takedown. And there was a moment in which I thought Gaethje could have stuffed it. Khabib just powered through, put him on his back, triangle choke, bye, match over. Dre, how did you see it?
No, I thought the exact same thing. So there's, like I said, there's some arguments where some people are like, oh, well, Gaethje was getting the better of the exchanges on the feet, which I do think that Gaethje overall is probably the better striker than Khabib. Khabib has never been a very crisp or clean striker from a technique standpoint, though he does actually pack a little bit of power. And we saw that in the McGregor fight, right? Is that the one knockdown in the fight actually came from Khabib to McGregor when a lot of people thought it would be the other way. And so, yeah, so I would say Gaethje was maybe getting a little bit better of the exchanges when it came to overall striking, right? Like you said, he mixed it up a lot more. We know that Gaethje's a very crisp, clean striker anyways. But yeah, Khabib's game plan, though, I mean, you could just tell that even though Gaethje was able to stuff one of those takedowns or two of those takedowns, it wasn't going to last very long. And especially once we got to, you know, the second, it was all going to be over. And once Khabib, literally as long as he's attached to you, you're getting taken down at some point, right? And it's crazy that he can do that against guys that have been All-Americans in college for wrestling, right? And I would like to actually see Khabib compete at the world level for wrestling, right? And freestyle, I don't think we ever see it, but I think he's that good at takedowns and that he could probably compete with, you know, world level freestyle wrestlers. And so I thought that, you know, he had control the entire time. I knew it was a very much a Khabib fight. And then towards the end, Khabib displayed almost the perfect MMA Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And what I mean by that is a lot of people have, you know, argued, you know, how practical is it to really learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like in the streets and all that stuff, right? Because you don't really want to pull guard. I know there's a lot of BJJ athletes, right, that as soon as the whistle blows, the match starts, they sit to their butt, they pull guard, right? They're not all the time laying on their back, but they're comfortable laying there on their back or whatever. And that's why there's even been arguments of people like, yeah, how much do you really need to focus on jits when it comes to MMA even? Why not just strike and do, you know, wrestling? Well, Khabib was able to take his Brazilian jiu-jitsu and executed it perfectly. He got, you know, there was sort of this transition from back to mount, and then he went to an S mount, then a high S mount. That high S mount is when like that knee was next to the shoulder and the other foot was draped over either by the armpit or across the neck. And that's where he transitioned it straight into that triangle, right? Or he could have gone armbar. He could have done a million things from there. And I think, like I said, that's the perfect example of how you actually utilize Brazilian jiu-jitsu when it does come to MMA, is that you don't put yourself in these bad situations like maybe sports Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where you roll to your back and, you know, you're trying to go for, let's say, a weird crazy triangle choke and you end up underneath, right? Or a weird armbar and you're getting punched in the face. You stay on top, you stay dominant, but then you slowly transition to whatever it is that you want. And by the time that he was rolling for that triangle choke, he had it locked up. It was going to be over anyways, no matter what. And so overall, I just thought it was excellent. It was just mastery on Khabib's part.
Mastery, dominance, and a very emotional win for the champion too. Obviously, he lost his father in recent months. That human spirit, being speaking to you, seeing him break down in tears after getting that win, it's huge. So, I mean, if this is the last time we see Khabib, it's a great note to go out on. I always like when champions push it to a nice round number, like 30, you know, but yes, we'll see if this is the last we see of Khabib. Never know, especially with the world of fighting. But back to the greatest of all time discussion, because John Jones actually chimed in himself. He was like, basically, hey, listen, I got 15 world titles in my back pocket. Khabib has 4. Do you think that plays into the argument? Again, an interesting discussion and a point I saw is when you look at the quality of opponents, you look at Khabib's last 3 opponents, Poirier, McGregor, obviously Gaethje, those are huge wins in themselves. I know we wanted the Tony Ferguson fight, but I mean, Gaethje beat Ferguson. So what are we going to do? If you just look at stack them on top of each other, you would say, obviously, Khabib should be better than Ferguson too. Another interesting fighter has entered that discussion as well. The last style bender, Israel Adesanya. And my thing on that one, and maybe I'm still bitter based off Adesanya's last fight, or not his last fight over Paulo Costa, but the previous one against Yoel Romero. I just don't like that when it comes to Israel, he's such a counter striker and he's so dependent on what his opponent is doing. I just would love to see a fighter, in terms of greatest of all time argument, be able to do multiple things and be able to push the tempo. And that's something I don't feel that Israel is able to do. And I'm not going to lie, I knock him a little bit for even the certain inappropriate behavior he had in the Paulo Costa fight. That kind of knocks him down in my book. It's a mental subliminal thing. I don't know if I want to see that fight again, to be honest, Paulo, but Andre, your thoughts, going back to it?
Yeah, you know, going back to it, I think you're right. And something that I will give John Jones, I think he's actually, it's hard to say this, right? Because I believe Khabib truly is the GOAT, but I think John Jones is the greatest talent of all time when it comes to MMA. I mean, just the sheer stuff that guy is able to do in the octagon is, you know, in a lot of ways more technical than whatever Khabib does, even though Khabib's at a very high technique when it comes to sticking to his game plan. But again, yeah, when it comes to the level of opponents, right, John's last few opponents, they haven't been the greatest. And John did have quite a few finishes of champions or former champions, right? Like we're looking at like Shogun Hua and, you know, Lyoto Machida and a lot of those guys, right? Rashad Evans, and John dismantled all of them. I think that would be maybe a knock against Khabib in that, like, how many former champs did he dismantle? Well, he's got a few with Conor McGregor. He's got, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos. Justin Gaethje technically was a champ from another organization, but Khabib doesn't have necessarily as many, like, I guess, grand finishes as you could say some of these other guys have. But at the same time, nobody was able to get past Khabib. So, you know, can you knock him when he's been one of the most dominant champs we've seen in recent history. When it comes to Israel Adesanya, I agree. I would like to see a little bit more overall mixed martial arts ability from Israel Adesanya. And you know, it's weird because, like we said, with Khabib, we give him props for sticking to his game plan and doing what works. And that's what Adesanya is doing, right? Is he's sticking to his game plan of like, the guy has to come to me. I'm not going to go to the guy, you know, that wants to punch me in the face. But at the same time, like you said, like it sort of lacks the overall MMA sort of glow to it, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it doesn't have, like, we haven't seen very impressive grappling ability from him, which he hasn't had to resort to. We haven't even seen like him going forward and pushing the pace. Like you said, it's all been just counter striking. And that's why for me, Israel Adesanya isn't up there yet. He also hasn't had the fights that Khabib has. I think Israel Adesanya is still in the teens, so he's not even to the 20s yet, right? Whereas Khabib has, you know, almost at 30 fights undefeated.
I think Israel's actually 20-0 if I check.
Is he 20-0 now?
So he's at even 20. And I know an interesting discussion point just to bring up here is people have thrown out the possibility of him versus John. Now, I know that is kind of a stretch. I know a lot of weird things are going on with John and the UFC right now and Dana and all of this. But John versus Israel, now that's something you want on the top of a marquee, am I right?
It definitely is. It's definitely marketable, right? And if you're Dana, you're probably trying to get that done. My worry, though, is that you almost burn your star in Israel Adesanya, because I don't think there's any way he beats John Jones. Like, Israel Adesanya, being a counter striker, he uses a lot of his evasiveness and length to get out of the way and then strike from a distance. Can you really outstrike a distance match with John Jones? I don't think so.
Those long arms too. I mean, you're right. When you look at both of those guys and what they do well and their body types, John matches up perfectly with Israel. And that's one of those things that you're always scared of when it comes to fighting, like putting your fighters, your star fighters, in positions where they could get their ass kicked. I mean, we were high on the Sugar Show, Sean O'Malley, and then he gets his ass kicked by Chito Vera, and bye. You know, you just instantly drop him down the card. What would that do to Israel's career? Because John's not going to give you a rematch if he beats your ass. Yeah, I mean,
nobody cares anymore, right? Everybody thought that Israel Adesanya is this great, you know, mystical fighter, and then you get your ass beat by John Jones. Like, nobody cares anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We'll wrap up on MMA here with just this, because that leaves a void at lightweight. Conor McGregor opened as the favorite via Vegas to take that championship strap. You still have Dustin Poirier down there. Gaethje's, I'm sure, is going to want to say something about it. He was obviously just the interim champion. Ferguson is throwing his name out there. He was actually sixth, most likely. What do you think is the next matchup? And yeah, who's our next lightweight champion?
So personally, I think that they're going to go with Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier. That matchup is going to be the one where whoever wins out of that gets the belt, right? And my thinking on that is it's purely business. Like, Gaethje was a good fighter. He had that sort of interim belt, right, that was unified with the Khabib fight. But Gaethje himself isn't necessarily the most marketable either. Maybe to, like, your blue-collar, pick-yourself-up-by-the-bootstraps type American citizen, right? But he doesn't have that pizzazz that Conor McGregor has. And so we've also seen that McGregor's beaten Poirier before. Now, granted, you can argue that there was some hits to the back of the head. Do I think that really made a difference? Not really. I think Conor probably would have won anyways. So I think if I'm Dana, that's the fight that I would bet on. And I would bet that Conor wins that fight and gets the belt back. That also makes Conor that triple, but still a double champ kind of, right? He's held the 145, he's held the 155, he gets the 155 back. So I think that's the fight that probably will be the belt next. As far as what ends up happening, I agree. I think Conor beats Dustin Poirier again, especially Conor was looking pretty good at 170. So I see Dustin losing that fight. I think Gaethje and Michael Chandler would be a really interesting fight. So they just signed Michael Chandler. I forget which organization he's coming over from, but he was another one of those sort of everybody thought, okay, this guy can probably compete in the UFC, right? And we've seen that in the fact that Chandler dismantled like Benson Henderson, who was a former UFC champ. So I actually think Chandler has a good shot at winning the belt at some point in the future, as long as he can continue to perform at the level he has been. So I'm really excited for him. And then, of course, never count out Ferguson either, right? I think Ferguson in, you know, the last fight that he lost to Gaethje, did he kind of get handled? Yes. But for some dumb reason, he also cut weight 2 times within, you know, like 2 weeks. And I think, you know, if he cleans that up, we can see a different Ferguson.
Well, if we see McGregor win it, I could see him pushing to try and get Khabib out of retirement for that last hurrah fight that he's been striving for a while. And then beyond that, perhaps if once that falls through, because I don't think Khabib's going to come out for Conor, he's said as much. I could see Gaethje trying to vie to fight Conor. And I think that could be a fun matchup because both guys are really talented strikers and will really push each other. And then Ferguson has an outside chance, as you mentioned, as we're talking about. But I think, unfortunately, his star got really killed, especially because he only fights once a year now at this point. That could be his fault. That could be Dana's fault. But the bottom line is he doesn't fight enough to recover from losses like he had against Gaethje. And I think that that's why some of the shine is lost, especially because he lost his biggest fight against Khabib. And he's obviously fuming about it because I saw him basically say Khabib pussied out. But dude, you lost. You would have had that fight had you not lost to Gaethje. That's your fault. No sympathy there.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah. One last thing that I'll add with Khabib too about the whole, will he come out of retirement, right? There's been arguments of like, will he come out of retirement for GSP? Will he do it for Conor? Will he do it for, you know, Ferguson or whatever? I don't think so. You know, and just to, you know, sort of put a bow on this, I don't think we ever see Khabib come back for several reasons. One, like he is a genuine, like he cares about his religion. He cares about his family. And when his father passed away, he said, like, I don't want to do it anymore without my dad. And, you know, from any other fighter, you might say, oh, he'll be back. But I think Khabib 100% is genuine in the fact that he cares about his religion. He cares about his family. We saw how personal he took it right when Conor and Conor's team was talking crap about his family and religion. So that's one reason. The other reason too, right, is Conor McGregor goes in and out of retirement because, you know, there's the whole, well, does he need money, right? He's blown through money pretty quick. You see other fighters, right, like the Tito Ortizes and the Rampages that fight at 40 years old or whatever because they need money again. With Khabib, he's going to Russia, and we know how Russia treats, like, their fighters and wrestlers that do really well. The dude's going to be set for life. If he ever needs a job, Vladimir Putin's got it for him, right? Like, he's being taken care of in Russia. He's going to be, you know, infamous for the rest of his life, all of eternity in Russia. So I don't think we ever see Khabib fight ever again.
Okay, before we get into the NFL topics, I'm going to allow you to rant and rave about your NBA Finals champion, Los Angeles Lakers, because you haven't had that opportunity yet on the Slump Buster. So Dre, I'm all ears. Go for it.
Yeah, all I want to say is I am ecstatic that the Lakers actually won, you know, another championship in my lifetime. So I've got to see a few with Kobe, got to see, you know, this one with LeBron. And, you know, what made it the best, what I actually wish, Juju, is I wish your team would have been in the finals, and I wish we would have beat the Boston Celtics to tie your record. And if you're going to say championships, I'm just going to say that the LA Lakers championships, in my opinion, have been more valuable than the Boston Celtics because the Celtics.
Okay, now we're going to fight.
Hold on.
Now we're going to fight.
Hold on. The Celtics won like half of their championships back when there was only like 3 teams in the league. So yeah, of course you're going to win a bunch.
Well, Bill Russell had also fight against racism back in then. I guess okay. We're still doing that now, but.
Exactly. It's 2020. What has changed? LeBron's still doing the same thing. But anyways, that's all I'm saying is that your championships are you know, any championship is good. Yours are less valuable than the Lakers. The Lakers are fantastic. I'm glad we tied 17. Anybody that wants to throw an asterisk on this, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. And what other year have, one, they played almost a full season, right? They played like 70 games, I want to say. That's 12 games short of a full season, right? So don't tell me about like, oh, they didn't play enough games. They played pretty much, you know, enough games that they were extremely close to finishing up a full season. Don't tell me about rest. Oh, LeBron and AD, they ended up getting rest. Everybody got rest as well, right? And if you're going to give crap about them getting a bunch of rest, what about the Clippers? The whole Clippers, oh, we're going to load manage. They got the most rest out of anybody, okay? So Clippers, don't give me that crap. They choked, whatever. Don't say, oh, they had the easiest path through the West. No, they didn't. Everybody was saying how tough Portland was going to be, and that Portland's been in the playoffs these past few years. This is going to be the best eighth seed, whatever. We took them out in five, right? Don't tell me about the Rockets, because the Rockets also got rest, even though they've got, you know, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, so they're kind of on the older end. They should have benefited from the rest too. They didn't. We took them out in five, right? Then you got the Denver Nuggets. Everybody's saying, oh, the Nuggets are young, the Nuggets are this. Well, they ended up beating the Clippers, who everybody thought was the best team, including myself. I actually thought the Clippers at one point in the season were the best team in the NBA, and what happened to them? They got beat by the Nuggets, and what happened to the Nuggets? They got beat in five. And then don't tell me about Miami, blah, 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 because Miami ended up, they got past the Bucks, they got past the Celtics. What else are we supposed to do? You only play who's there in front of you. So with all of that, don't give me the asterisk. Oh, and the last few things is one, LA Lakers, most worthless one seed in history. We didn't even get home court advantage. We didn't even get to play at Staples Center. Yes, you can say the virtual fans, it's not the same. So it wasn't even worth us getting the one seed, yet we still beat everybody. And then what other championship do you have to spend 3 months away from your family, right, and not see them? And everybody is like, oh, you know, well, they were just in the bubble and the bubble is this and that. I think it is extremely hard to stay 3 months away from your family. And we even lost the starter because of the bubble. So we lost Avery Bradley. So don't even give me the whole, oh, Miami Heat lost some players too. Yeah, we lost the starter as well. With all of that, this is by far my favorite championship that the Lakers have won. As much as I love Kobe, rest in peace to Kobe in the year that he died. And, you know, what's also sweet is that the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers are not my baseball team, I'm an Angels fan, and it sucks that I chose them instead of the Dodgers. You know, LA brings back two championships in 1 year. End of my rant.
Okay, that was a solid rant. But you know what's going to be delicious? When the Celtics go back, championship banner 18, and beat your Lakers next year. Book it. On the books.
If that happens, Juju, we got to go to a game for sure. I will pay the $1,000 per ticket to go to a Lakers-Celtics final.
All right. It is recorded. It is finalized. It is published. If that happens. But by the way, you gave me hope there. Asterisk season? Yes. Dodgers, asterisk season. Putting it out there. Astros still champions. I'm just trolling at this point.
What I will say, so with baseball is a little bit weirder, right? Like you could say like there was the asterisk because some teams in some ways did get treated a little bit different because you had COVID. So there are some teams that couldn't play for 2 weeks, right? When other teams had it sort of more stable. And that's where I will say like, okay, I could see asterisks being more, not valuable, but you know, more applicable. And that when teams are treated different, yes, there's an asterisk. But when it came to basketball, right, especially the NBA season, every team got treated the exact same. And that's why I don't think anybody that's saying that there's an asterisk, I don't think that that's true, right, is because every team knew what they were getting into with the bubble. Every team had players that had the choice to opt out or not. Everybody knew how long the bubble was going to be. And nobody got COVID in the bubble. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, the Lakers took off 2 weeks while everybody else was playing. Everybody played the same amount of games in the bubble. Everybody knew what the playoff system was going to be, et cetera. And so I could see there being an asterisk for like college football, because we're already seeing what's happening to college football, games getting canceled left and right. The records might not even line up very well. So how do you evaluate a team that's only played 10 games versus a team that's played 16? That I could see the asterisk. Even baseball, right, with the Dodgers, yeah. See a little bit more.
Baseball's, I think it really just comes down to the nature of the sport. Obviously, baseball is supposed to be a grind. It's supposed to be a marathon, not a sprint. A 60-game regular season versus 162-game regular season. When you strike 100 games off of the books, I think that that does impact it slightly more. You mentioned with the NBA argument, you're really only talking about a 12-game difference in a couple months in between. With the MLB breakdown, it's 3 months of play that we didn't get to see. We didn't have an all-star break. There was a lot of unique things that we'll never see. Again, Dodgers fans, I'm actually just kidding. I won't take anything away from you because if the Giants would have won the World Series this year, I would have been gloating just the same too. And that's all I really got to say about that one. Let's talk here, because it wouldn't be a Juju and Dre episode if we didn't talk about a staple. When we think about the first month of the Slump Buster being a thing, this man was the main headline. He was the main draw. He was the attraction that brought everyone to us. Antonio Clown. Because Antonio Brown is now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's official. Tampa Bay, man, they are just accruing talent left and right. And I think it's only appropriate because when we last talked about AB, we wouldn't really talk about him until he was on a roster. Well, he's on a roster, and he's on a pretty damn good roster at the moment. Let's talk about the impact first of just AV the player being on this Tampa Bay Bucks team. What are you expecting, Dre? Is Tampa the top team? Are they the team to beat now?
Man, you know, and I've got to sort of eat my own words, right? As I said that the Patriots would be better than Tampa Bay, and that's obviously not the case, right? And that's not true. And so Tom Brady, man, I got to give it to him. Being as old as he is, he's still able to perform. But it also makes sense that Tampa Bay would be in such a rush to flood Tom Brady with this talent, right? Because you maybe got 1 or 2 years max that he still performs at this level. And even that might be generous, right? Maybe this is his only year. And so Tampa Bay is acting like they want to win it this year. So I give them props for that. I do think that Antonio Brown does add a little bit to the offense. He always does, right? We saw him in that one game with the Patriots last year and was the number one receiver on that day. I think that it definitely makes Tampa Bay, I think they definitely go to the NFC championship. I still worry, though, like we've seen them a few times get in a few deficits, right? And we've seen some times where like Tom Brady still just looks off, right? Where he's not connecting with his receivers. And maybe that's from learning a new system or whatever. So I do worry. I can't put my finger on it on like what some of those holes still are with the Buccaneers. But I do think that they're formidable. And especially with the way that the NFC is sort of shaken up this year, I don't know if I actually do see a team that competes with them.
As it turns out, I mean, Chris Godwin, obviously, he's going out. He has a little bit of finger injury. So you put an AB into that role, perfect fit. When you have all three of those wide receivers on the field, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Antonio Brown, if you're Tom Brady, it's like, pick your poison. Which one do you want to use on a given day? But I will say this, the last time we saw AB, and I just went on a binge watching AB highlights recently. Mm-hmm. It's clear that the guy's going to be the best wide receiver on the field between the three of them. The guy was on a Hall of Fame trajectory before last season. He was going to go down as one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. Part of that could have been Big Ben force feeding him in Pittsburgh. But honestly, like you mentioned, in his first game with Tom Brady, he looked great in practice, in training camp with Derek Carr and the Raiders. He looked like the best guy on the field. He was smoking their DBs left and right. I think that, yes, no doubt about it, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the favorites out of the NFC. My only thing, and this is reflective in my power rankings, I still have Kansas City ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Just because I do believe in the continuity of that team. They've obviously made some additions here, too, with Le'Veon Bell in recent weeks to make their team better. And I just think that Patrick Mahomes is the better quarterback ahead of Tom Brady, as crazy it is to say. I will say that Tampa has a better defense. That front seven of Tampa is fearsome. Shaq Barrett, Vita Vea, Lavonte David, all these guys are extremely talented players, and they've even rebuilt their secondary a little bit. So that back end isn't as bad as it used to be in Tampa. I think part of that's obviously a product of your quarterback not turning the ball over nearly at the rate. Even though we have seen some pick sixes from Tom Brady this year, he can't match Jameis in that category. Yeah, I mean, AB being back, I think now we're going to talk about the character part of it. Think, can AB keep himself in check? I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to say yes because I believe that even in the couple weeks he was with the Patriots, he seemed to tone it down because of the guy throwing him the football. That was Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And had it not been for that weird thing, that group chat in which he was texting his accuser, which is just luring 101, don't do that. He would have had a very productive year for the Patriots last year. And I think now he's going to have a productive year with the Bucks. That's why I picked him up in fantasy. So eat that one. Picked him up in that league we're in. So have fun with that, Dre.
I know. I saw that. As soon as I saw that message come through, I was like, oh, shoot. I need to check who has Antonio Brown now. And sure enough, it was you. No, I agree. I think as far as the extreme antics, I don't think that we'll see it from Antonio Brown this year, especially if, you know, he wants to continue to play in the league. He's got to be on his best behavior. What I do worry about, though, is we've seen him when he has competition with just like a Juju Smith-Schuster, right? And so we've seen that. He was still the number one option in Pittsburgh, but when, you know, Big Ben started throwing to him a little bit less, he was flipping over Gatorade containers and kicking trash cans and stuff like that. What's going to happen when you have an offense where you got such amazing weapons, like you said, you know, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Gronk is starting to get his mojo back a little bit. He looked really bad the first few weeks, but, you know, Gronk is arguably looking more Gronkish. And so Tom Brady, I think, you know, being the quarterback that he is not going to say, hey, I'm going to prioritize force feeding Antonio Brown. I think Brady could care less about feeding Antonio Brown. And it's more about what do I have to do to get the win, just because we know Brady's competitive nature. Hence why he's playing at, you know, 40 years old. And so that would be my only concern that I can see is Antonio Brown will still be the best receiver on this team if he still has all of his athleticism. But how will he handle maybe not always being the most productive receiver on any given Sunday just due to Brady spreading it around?
If he keep his ego in check, and I think Tom is a perfect guy to kind of measure that. But then again, I could be wrong. He'd be calling Tom a cracker and throwing a ball at his head in 3 weeks. Let's keep an eye out for that.
This is message brought to you by the Foundation for a Perfect Package.
Why do I need Manscaped?
Why do I need Manscaped?
Why do I need Manscaped?
Because the only thrill I want is the one up top.
Because being in a relationship is not an excuse to be lazy.
Because I like talking ball, not smelling like them.
Because deforestation is proven to prevent forest fires.
Manscaped is the only brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming.
Manscaped's Crop Preserver guarantees that you smell your best all day long.
Manscaped boxer briefs are the most comfortable underwear on the market.
Manscaped's advanced skincare technology makes nicks a thing of the past.
Manscaped is the number one in men's grooming. Subscribers get 2 free blade refills every 3 months. Get 20% off plus free shipping handling with the promo code SLUMP at manscaped.com. That's the promo code SLUMP at manscaped.com. Get your Lawnmower 3.0 today.
We are the Slump Busters.
And we approve this message.
Hello guys, this is Juju Talk Sports. You like sports betting, right? Of course you do. Well, let's bust that slump. Let me tell you about RazorSport.com. Razor is a worldwide sports betting network all designed around helping you. Their diverse crew of handicappers predicts plays the biggest sharps don't want you to know about. Go to their website right now and sign up for a free trial at RazorSport.com. That's Razor, R-A-Z-E-R, Sport.com. Proud partners of the Slump Buster podcast. Check them out and enjoy the rest of the show.
Okay, let's talk about some football that's taking place this week. Let's move into the NFL Week 8 schedule, starting off with Thursday Night Football. Our first game of the week is going to be the Falcons at Carolina. The Falcons lost another heartbreaker. And people, I've talked about this on my other show. People are giving Todd Gurley hell for falling in the end zone. I say you take the touchdown, and then it's on your defense to keep the opposing team out of the end zone with a minute left. I don't think you ever should fault the guy for scoring a touchdown, because I think it would have been a worse look had he stopped at the 1 yard line and then they don't score the touchdown. Wouldn't that have been worse? Just saying, I'm going to throw it out there, but Falcons, Panthers -2.5. Who are you taking, Dre?
I think I'm going to take the Panthers. I mean, I think for, you know, the Falcons, it's been a rough year for them. Obviously, you know, with there's some leadership changes. And then they've had quite a bit of heartbreaks, right? Like you're losing some games to who we now know is not a very good team, right? And the Cowboys, and you're whooping on them. And so with all of that, I just don't think that the Falcons are mentally in a very good place. And Carolina's been doing all right. You know, Teddy Bridgewater's been hanging in there. He's been doing a pretty good job. So for all of those reasons, I'll take Carolina.
Yeah, I was actually impressed. Teddy had a throw in their recent game this past Sunday against the Saints that made me think, man, this guy's got some arm strength. I'm actually really impressed with what Carolina's done. This is their first week back with Christian McCaffrey. I am also going to take the Panthers to win this week at home. First game on the Sunday slate, the New England Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. The Bills are 3.5-point favorites. I guess this game really comes down to, do I believe – the Bill Belichick is going to lose another consecutive game. And I know that in many ways they have had ownage over the Bills in recent years. And the Bills didn't look good this past Sunday against the Jets. They actually were pretty damn bad. I don't think they scored a touchdown in that game. That's definitely concerning. They are, like I said, 3.5-point favorites at home. Dre, where are you going?
Yeah, this is a hard one. Like you said, do you really think Bill Belichick is going to lose another game, right? And maybe, hey, he doesn't have Tom Brady, and that's sort of his kryptonite, right, is not having Tom Brady, and maybe he does. But at the same time, we've seen what the Bills can be. We've seen what Josh Allen can be. And when they're ready to go, they look really good. And so this one game against the Jets, could that have been sort of an outlier for them?
Could they have been looking ahead, like, hey, we play the Patriots next week. This is the game that determines the AFC East.
Exactly, right? And everybody's been saying, oh, the Jets are getting the number one pick, right? Because that's how bad the Jets are. And so with that, I think I am going to go with the Bills. I think they've consistently been better throughout this season than what I've seen from the Patriots, though the Patriots have had some of their highs. I've seen more consistent lows from the Patriots than I'm used to seeing. And so with that, even though the Bills did not have their best game last weekend, I will still take the Bills.
A big story this week coming out of Boston is that Stephon Gilmore put his house on the market. I think that's going to weigh heavy on the defense. Cam is just a bit of a roller coaster at the moment. I think that the Bills defense does well against quarterbacks like Cam. I'm going to take the Bills to win at home. We read 32 games. Next game up is going to be the Tennessee Titans at 5-1 coming off a huge loss that I'm sure you're thrilled about against the Cincinnati Bengals at home. The Bengals are going to be +5.5. So Tennessee, of course, the favorites. The Bengals, a sneaky competitive, they'll fight you tooth and nail, but Tennessee should just be able to listen. Cincinnati has trouble tackling. Teams that have trouble tackling against a guy that refuses to go down and be tackled like Derrick Henry, that's just a matchup disadvantage. I'm going to take the Titans to get back on their feet after their first loss of the season.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Do I like what Cincinnati's done? Yeah, even though they're in my own division, like, I've got to give them props. Like, I think they look scrappy. This has probably got to be the most hope that they've had in a while, except for maybe, like, the good Dalton years when they were able to make the playoffs. But with all that being said, I still think that Tennessee is too good. We even saw them almost come back from that big deficit that, you know, the Steelers had them in of a +20-point, you know, deficit. And so I think just with all of that, Tennessee is just too good. They're too well coached to lose to this team.
Okay. This one has a lot of playoff implications on the line. And I will say, if you look at last week's box score of between the Raiders and the Buccaneers, you'd have thought that the Buccaneers just blew them out from the get-go. The Raiders were actually in that game for the majority of that game. They just really lost track of things in the last 12 minutes. And then with the Browns, they are a tough 5-2 team to read. Obviously, they just lost OBJ for the remainder of the season with a torn ACL. We'll see it because Baker has been proven to play better despite OBJ being on the field because it forces him to have to spread the ball around a lot. The home team, the Browns in this case, are going to open as 2.5-point favorites. I'm going to take the Raiders. I think that they're going to go into Cleveland. They've had some big performances this year against Kansas City, the Saints. And again, they were competing with the Tampa Bay Bucs for the majority of that game. I think that it's been shown that Baker can struggle. And I don't know if the Browns could commit to the right game plan to win this game. I'm going to take the Raiders in a road upset.
I guess just for old time's sake, Juju, I'm going to pick against you just to be different. No, I do really like the Raiders. I think that what they've got going this year has also been fantastic for them. You can see them scrapping with a lot of the really good teams. And even the games that they've lost, I don't think they've looked all that bad in necessarily. And so I think the Raiders definitely have a chance. And if they win the game, I'm not going to be surprised. But I think I'll stick with the Browns. I think, you know, Baker Mayfield's got a little chip on his shoulder, and he was counted out at the beginning of the year, especially when they lost. I think it was the Baltimore was their first game. Everybody was like, oh, does Baker Mayfield have it? I mean, come on now. Baltimore, we know what they were last season, right? And we know that they've got an MVP caliber quarterback. And so I don't fault them for that loss. So I think with all of that, they've got, you know, some good momentum. Even though they lose OBJ, I think I'll go with the Browns for this one.
I just think the Browns, when they face good teams, they don't perform. And I think the Raiders are actually a good team. They're at least a good team offensively. Mm-hmm. Next game up. Coming off the bye week, the Indianapolis Colts at 4-2 open as 3-point road favorites against the Detroit Lions at 3-3. Detroit obviously were the beneficiaries of that Falcons collapse. Detroit could, you could make an argument they could have been 4-2 if they didn't have their own little collapse in week one, where DeAndre Swift dropped the ball. They blew that big lead to Mitch Trubisky. Detroit, similar to last year, they compete and stay in games. Matthew Stafford, since he's healthy and on the field, he gives them an opportunity, and they develop a decent rotation with their running backs. I would have preferred if DeAndre Swift would get more touches than Adrian Peterson at this point in his career. But I think this is a case for the home team to come away with an upset, because I know everyone's high on the Colts, but I feel as though the Colts are a little bit fraudulent at points. Just, you know, obviously they have very high-end defense, but I think that the Phillip Rivers decline is still very much a thing. And I do have my concerns there. I think that Detroit can do enough to win this game. I'm going to take Detroit at home.
Yeah, like you said, this one's a hard one. Indianapolis has been doing better than I thought that they would.
Coming off a bye, it helps them.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with Indy. I do think that they are better than what I thought, and the Lions are a hard team for me to trust, right? Like, you never know. Like, there's times where they look really, really good, and they're competing and scrapping with some tough teams, but then there's also times where they're losing just bad games. And so for all of that, I think I'll take Indy just because I trust them a little bit more than I do the Lions.
Okay, NFC North matchup coming up. We have the Minnesota Vikings, who are seemingly in a bit of a fire sale. They just got rid of Yannick Ngakoue, a player they just traded for this offseason. And they're going to be playing the Green Bay Packers. Packers also coming off a bye. Packers at 5-1, and they're going to be 6.5-point favorites at home. Based off the first matchup between these two, I got to go with the Packers. I think is the, with what Aaron Rodgers is able to do well, if you're not able to generate a pass rush on him, which I don't think the Vikings will be able to do, because not only is Yannick Ngakoue not going to be out there, but Danielle Hunter is also out with an injury. Their secondary is bad. It's not a good Mike Zimmer team. Forces Kirk Cousins to do more things. And when Kirk Cousins is forced to do more things outside of his skill set, it doesn't produce the best results. I think the Packers are going to win. And I'm even going to go with the Vegas line here. I think they're going to win big.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think the Packers always have ownage over them anyways, right? We've seen year after year, as much as we're like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is on the decline, or, oh, you know, he doesn't have anybody to throw to. Oh, they don't have a defense. Whatever it's been in the past, right? Aaron Rodgers still finds a way to beat this team. Same thing like he does with the Cowboys every year. And so I think now, especially that we're seeing the Vikings just don't look that good this year for whatever reason it is, like, I'm actually really surprised that they've looked as bad as they do. And so I think just for all of that, Aaron Rodgers is still looking good. He looks like he sort of has a point to prove with them drafting a quarterback in this draft. And so I've got to go with Green Bay.
Not much analysis here in this next one, but Jets plus 19.5 versus the Chiefs on the road. That's one of the biggest lines you're going to see in an NFL game, and I think it's definitely well-earned with how we think of the Chiefs versus how we think of the Jets. Yes, again, the Jets had a good performance, I guess, quote-unquote, against the Bills. I think it was more a bad Bills performance than a good Jets performance. Yeah, even with a 19.5-point line, I feel as though the Chiefs are going to be the winner, or going to exceed that. It's hard to not go against it. And then two alternative storyline in this game, guess who's going to be on that Chiefs roster? Le'Veon Bell, a player just released from the Jets a couple weeks ago. Let's talk about this from the Steelers fan perspective. Do we get a Le'Veon Bell revenge game here?
It's funny, Le'Veon Bell, I feel like he really isn't like that vengeful of a dude. I do really think that he's just all about his money, right? And is like, hey, I just wanted to be paid, right? Pittsburgh, from what I hear, there's no ill will against Pittsburgh. I don't know if he has ill will against the Jets, right? He's probably
actually sure. You sure? I think he kind of, well, I mean, he's probably happy they released him, but I think he's probably upset that they, when they paid you $28 million, right?
Exactly. I think they paid him $28 million, though there was the whole, like, when he showed up, they didn't know that they had actually paid him, right, and picked him up.
Well,
and
Adam Gase? Yeah. And everyone hates Adam Gase.
So, I mean, like, maybe he's upset at Adam Gase, and maybe that's what gives him a little bit more motivation. But I think the organization as a whole, like Le'Veon Bell, he really just does seem to be after his money. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, hey, you know, because everybody's sort of been saying, like, oh, Le'Veon Bell, he doesn't have it anymore. But now that he actually is on a good team, right, I think we see him get back to that production that he was at when he was with the Steelers.
Yeah, I could see Andy Reid just cooking up some plays for Le'Veon Bell, though, to give him that kind of performance, because Andy Reid is kind of sadistic in his own way sometimes in these type of games. All right, well, not too much more analysis there. I actually vote keep Adam Gase if you're truly trying to tank, because I think it's better for the Jets.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I would keep Adam Gase for now anyways, right? And then once, you know, you get Trevor Lawrence in the draft, then you can move on from him. Other thing that I will say too is that Lev Bell, right, was really like the prototypical receiver back. And so I think he's going to really benefit from being in that offense.
Oh, absolutely. Next game up, I don't know if this is necessarily a great game per se, but it's probably a game that's going to have a lot of my attention in the morning. The Los Angeles Rams are going cross country to face the Miami Dolphins in Tua's first NFL start. So it's a much must-watch game in that respect because everyone's curious. They just want to see how Tua is. Did you agree with the decision to bench Ryan Fitzpatrick there coming off a couple big wins against the Niners, the Jets? How do you feel about that one, Dre, before we get into the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about what is it that you're going for, right? And I think that the Dolphins are not going for win now mode, and I really do think that they're trying to build their future.
I mean, they're 3-3. You can make an argument they're only one game out of the AFC East.
Yeah, like and you know, why not try for the playoffs this year? Where I do think that they went wrong. So I guess I'll agree with, yes, they're trying to see, hey, what do we have in Tua? But I also don't see the reason for why you would rush it. And in fact, most people were expecting Tua to probably sit this whole year, especially given, you know, his injury history. And so why not try to make the playoffs this year, give your fans a little bit of hope, and then you start Tua maybe next year. And we've seen, right, that sort of taking a red shirt for a lot of these NFL rookies isn't necessarily a bad thing when you're at the quarterback position. And so I thought maybe the decision was a little bit rushed, but you know, maybe they're like, hey, we just want to see what we've got now. Right.
I mean, he was going to be out there on the field at some point. Not anyone really truly red shirts anymore. I mean, they usually play at least one game, whether that's week 17, he gets to play it in week 8. But let's not talk about the Dolphins, like them putting into a necessarily means that this team can't win. Tua was drafted number 5 overall for a reason. It's because they believe in the talent of Tua Tagovailoa. And, you know, he has plenty of stars that he could utilize in Miami. They've been fighting. They've been a sneaky team over the last couple weeks. I mean, hell, they blew out my Niners. Can they beat the Rams, though? The Rams have benefited from having to mostly beat up on the NFC East and the Bears. That's where all of their wins have come from this year. They are going to be 3.5-point road favorites. And as I mentioned, this is a morning game in Miami.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, too, is I thought that they put Tua kind of in a hard position, right? Like, you're coming off and you're playing the Rams, and the Rams are not as good as their Super Bowl year by any means, but they're still, like you said, a pretty decent team. They've benefited from their schedule a little bit, but the Rams are still always tough. And so I think, you know, I think that I'll actually take Miami. I'll take a chance on Tua, even though we haven't really seen much of him at the NFL level. But I'll put my hopes on Tua.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Rams. We'll be separated in that regard, even though, like I said, I'm going to be interested to watch the game. But I know that as much as you'd like to watch that game, you have a different game you're going to be watching in the morning. That is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers undefeated going into Baltimore at 5-1. The Ravens are opening up at 3.5-point favorites via Vegas. How do you feel about that?
I think it's probably right. I think, you know, a lot of people have Pittsburgh as being number one in the power rankings, right? Which makes sense because we're the only undefeated team still. But we just beat the Tennessee Titans, who a lot of people had pretty high up in the power rankings at the start of the year. So I do have to give my team credit. But as of recently, the Ravens, I mean, I won't even see as of recently, because it's always a tough matchup with the Ravens. And I think that if anything, we'll split the series. And so I think that, you know, since we're going to play in Baltimore, the Ravens get up just a little bit more for that game. I do think that we're probably due for a loss. And so for all of those reasons, I think, you know, the Ravens are probably the correct pick.
You get the Ravens coming off the bye, and the Steelers are coming off a pretty emotional, tough victory against Tennessee. I think I will take the Ravens as well, just given the circumstances going into this game. And unfortunately for the Steelers, you're put in a position where your bye week was very early on because it was substituted for the Tennessee Titans, COVID issues going on. So you can blame Bigger Than Goliath for his team's shortcomings there. I'm kind of more surprised that this game wasn't flexed into Sunday night, considering that the night game is going to be an NFC East showdown. I would much rather have seen Steelers-Ravens in primetime, but that's just me. Let's talk about actually another matchup revolving a member of the Slumpbuster crew. Of course, the Los Angeles Chargers, with our good friend, the Fantasy Aristotle, will be going into Denver. Both these teams are sitting at 2-4. The Chargers are 3-point favorites, and I think that a lot of that has to do with the shining star that is Justin Herbert. Now, Justin Herbert, the games he has lost, they've been against Hall of Fame quarterbacks in Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees. All three of those games, the Chargers could have won. They really could have. this presents an opportunity for him to face Drew Lock, who is an exciting younger quarterback that a lot of people are happy about, but one that has underperformed since coming back from his shoulder injury. I think I got to believe in Justin Herbert and what the Chargers do. Hopefully it's not snowing in Denver like it was this previous weekend, because that could present problems for this team. At least it has in the past. I'm going to take Chargers on the road.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I think I'm going to go with the Chargers. I've got Herbert on my fantasy and I'm loving what he's doing so far. And surprisingly, right, like him and Wentz, those are my two quarterbacks, and every day, like, I get frustrated by Wentz, but he actually hasn't had too bad of a game fantasy-wise. But no, I think that Herbert is a shining young star. I think, you know, I didn't think that he would play this year, but of course there's unfortunate injuries that happen when you stab somebody in their chest.
Can we start by saying, Aris, I cannot believe that you wanted Tyrod to start this entire year. And now look at you. You're just chilling there with your Justin Herbert jersey, enjoying the show.
I know. Yeah, and Aris was even a big proponent of Tyrod should get his job back, right? Which, yeah. I could see the argument for that. It's kind of messed up. It wasn't necessarily even his fault, right? Or even football related that he's not starting anymore. But no, you know, getting back to the topic at hand, Justin Herbert. It's been a pleasant surprise for him. It sucks for
Tyrod. Fun. He's fun to watch, though. I'll say that. Yeah. He's got a cannon, dude. Like, when he was nailing, like, wide receivers running down the sidelines, you're like, this kid's awesome.
No, he's something special, right? And I think the Chargers' future looks bright. If they can build around him the correct way, we know that it's the Chargers at the end of the day. There's a reason why, you know, Manning didn't want to play for them. But if they can become one of those good organizations that knows how to build around this kid, he's going to be good. So for all those reasons, right? Like, yeah, that's why I'm taking the Chargers on the road.
Before I move on, real quick, who's going to have the better NFL career? Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, or Tua?
Oof.
It's a quick one. We're not going to debate it much. Just go with your heart.
Okay, we're not going to. All right. I'll say Herbert right now. I think Herbert's in the best position. I think Cincinnati is not a good franchise historically. Miami maybe can get it back. I've seen some really good things with Flores, but I'll go with Herbert for now.
Okay, next matchup. The New Orleans Saints are going to be 4.5 road favorites going into Chicago. Now, Chicago, they're playing on a short week because they played on Monday Night Football. They're 5-2, and they're one of those. They're one of the most sketchy 5-2 teams in the league right now. No one really trusts them. And why people don't trust them is because of that offense, Nick Foles. It hasn't looked pretty. It's very pieced together. They launch in some games they really shouldn't have. That defense, though, is still actually pretty legit. And I'm actually going to go with the upset here. I think the Bears are going to win at home because I don't trust Drew Brees in playing in Chicago in late October. I just think the weather is starting to make a little bit of a turn in certain parts of the country. And Drew Brees, historically, outside of the dome, hasn't looked great. And he hasn't really looked great this year. Who knows if Michael Thomas is going to be out there? I'm going with the Bears. I think that's a good upset pick.
No, I think that's probably one of the better upset picks that you can choose this week. And like you said, Drew Brees has been very lackluster this year. The Saints as a whole have been very lackluster. And with, you know, the absence of Michael Thomas, just hasn't looked all that great. But still, you know, Sarah would kill me if I did not choose her team against the Bears. And so for that reason, I will go with New Orleans Saints.
Did I hear a whip sound?
Hey, you know, I would rather take my L on the football field than back at home. So
fair enough. Well, hopefully it pays off for you. Okay, next big game is going to be my San Francisco 49ers against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, this game every year, game in and game out, is always such a dogfight. Well, aside from when the Niners sucked during the Chip Kelly years. But for the most part, when both teams are good, this is usually a game of the year candidate. Both teams, I think, are good. The Niners had that really rough stretch there against back-to-back losses against Miami and the Eagles, but since have seemed to right the ship. Like, if they would have just beat the Patriots, I wouldn't be in so high on them, but they destroyed the Patriots, and that's something that good teams do. Good teams beat up on bad teams. The Seahawks, they're coming off a Monday Night Football Sunday Night Football loss to the Arizona Cardinals, in which both teams, it was just an offensive shootout, and what you learn from that, Seattle has no defense, none, zilch. It's all been on the arm of Russell Wilson, in which they've won their games. They're 3-point favorites at home, and I can't begrudge Vegas for choosing to go that way. I'm going to go with my Niners. I'm just going to go with the homer pick on this one, just because even though I have the negative thought cloud in my head that says the Seahawks are going to win this one because they always win these type of games against us, I'm going to choose my Niners because they've been playing really well. If they can just maintain and hold Russ, I think they can do enough offensively to win this game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it sucks too, right, that the Niners went through that big stretch of injury after injury after injury.
Still not dealing with it. Last week they played without both their starting safeties and their fourth street running back went down with a high ankle injury after being named the offensive player of the week in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been brutal for you guys this year. And so I still think that you guys are, like you said, dealing with a lot of those sort of lingering effects of lots of injuries. And so the Seahawks also, I think, always step it up, right? Russell Wilson always steps it up when it comes to these divisional games. And so for those reasons, I will go with the Seahawks in this one. I think you guys split the series, though.
Okay, Sunday night. Someone has to win this division. Someone has to take the lead here and do it. The Cowboys at 2-5 are opening up as 8-point underdogs against the Eagles on the road. And the Eagles aren't much better. They're at 2-4-1. I'm actually kind of impressed, though, that the Eagles are more than touchdown favorites in this one. I think that's maybe a little bit high. But then again, when I stop and think about it, Dak's out, so Andy Dalton comes in. He's potentially out. So they're on this undrafted rookie quarterback out of James Madison at this point. I'm not really too sure off the top of my head the name. I think it's like DaVinci or something like that. But the point is, you're on your third string backup QB out of James Madison. I think that that's the big reason behind this line being so high. So I'm going to have to go with the Eagles because just on that standard alone.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's going to be the Eagles. I don't see any reason to not choose the Eagles. The Cowboys obviously have not shown any like real sign of, that you should be confident in them to win this game.
Ben DiNucci, just got to throw it in there.
Nobody knows who that is anyways, Juju, so you didn't have to look up his name. But no, I mean, the Cowboys have just looked awful this year, right? And the Eagles have not looked good either. But the Cowboys have looked even worse, right? And you know, maybe it's all of the changes they went through with, you know, they added quite a few pieces that we weren't sure if they were going to fit. Though Alden Smith has actually done, you know, better than I thought, and he's behaved well, and he's playing, he's doing his job. But then you got the Mike McCarthy and all the leadership changes, right? And I just think it hasn't gelled well. You can sort of see it. Everything looks disjointed, right? The defense doesn't look all that great. And then the offense, especially with Dak out, doesn't look good either. And so I think that, you know, at least the Eagles can continue to rally behind Carson Wentz, even if he still doesn't have anybody to throw to. And I think that'll win it at the end of the day.
I would say the Cowboys fans are thrilled that you even said their defense doesn't look all that great, because I think most people would say their defense looks downright terrible, abysmal, atrocious.
It looks so bad.
It's gross football to watch, honestly, seeing their defense play. And with that said, their only chance of winning this game is if Ben DiNucci goes off. And, hey, he's got the horses to do it when you look at Amari, CeeDee Lamb, all those guys. But, again, I'm not putting my faith in Ben DiNucci. The Ben DiNucci season, it does not start here. Okay. Last game of the weekend is going to be, or I should say the start of the week, Monday Night Football. Tampa is opening up as 10.5-point favorites going on the road into New York to face the Giants. The Giants defense has actually been playing pretty well over the last couple weeks, but we just talked about Tampa Bay is probably the best team in football at this point. So I don't see any reason that they shouldn't just roll over the New York Giants. And that's just quick, easy analysis there. Dre?
Yeah, nothing further to add. I'm going with Tampa. Like, if you don't choose Tampa, there's probably something wrong with you, or you're just a Giants fan, right?
Or you just really believe in Daniel Jones. You believe that Daniel Jones, you're Dave Gettleman, and you are just that high strung.
maybe he's channeling his inner Eli Manning, right? And he's going to go out and
beat Tom Brady.
You never know.
Are we starting that narrative?
You never know.
Brings out the Manning gene.
That's what it is. I mean, he sort of looks half Manning if you take a look at him. So
just wait in a couple, just wait in like 5 years when Tom Brady's still playing in his age 50 season and Arch Manning comes out to play his first NFL game. Did you see that? They're playing the youngest like Manning's like games on ESPN. They're already hyping up the next Bronny James of football there.
That's so crazy. And he's
athletic. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to see, like, it's really interesting, right? I think in basketball, it's a little bit easier to do that just because you've got these freaks of nature that just totally stand out. But in football, we don't see that too often, right? Where you've got high schoolers that you're like, oh yeah, I've got to watch this kid because he'll be in the pros for sure.
So he's already 6'3", and he's, like I said, he moves. So just think about that. Just put that scary thought in people's minds. Peyton Manning with Wills.
Oh, I know.
The guy's, at that point, he's winning like 10 Super Bowls minimum.
Yeah. And then like, plus you get all of the film now and we're seeing what some of these modern quarterbacks can do, right? Like your Russell Wilsons and then your Pat Mahomes, right? And so he's got the benefit of film. He's got the benefit of his family and athleticism. Oh man, it's going to be over.
Okay. Well, Dre, obviously your first podcast appearance in a while. Welcome back. How was it being back in the driver's seat? Or the passenger seat, matter of perspective.
It's been great. You know, I've missed it. I've definitely, you know, I've had some other stuff, you know, in my personal life that I've had to get done, right, of course. And that's kept me busy for sure. But it is always nice to be back on the pod and talking to you, Juju. And you know, hopefully people are enjoying my episode back.
Message for the listeners before you head out?
Not much. I just want to say, you know, stay safe, stay healthy. You know, with the pandemic, things are getting crazy, whether or not you believe in it. Crazy times, but you know, hopefully we're here on the holidays. So hopefully enjoy it with your family and your loved ones.
Okay. And I kind of want to echo that statement in particular this week. Actually, unfortunately, had like a loss of someone like close, a coworker who was just a couple years older than me. So I just want to like echo that statement there. It's just like, you know, tell someone you love them today, you know, enjoy your family, your friends, because we're all on borrowed time here, guys. We talked about Kobe earlier this year. We talked about a bunch of things going on in 2020. It's important to go out there and do something you love, something you're passionate about, and never like waste a day. Don't waste a day doing stupid shit. Just enjoy your life. But other than that, guys, hit that subscribe button, like, comment, let us know what you think. Find us in all podcasting platforms, IG at Slumpbuster Podcast, Twitter at Slumpbuster Pod, and stay safe, happy, and healthy. We'll see you on the next one.